Hey, how are you?
Yeah, we met.
Yes.
How are you doing?
Good luck.
Thank you. Thanks.
Hi.
I know. What, can I start? Are people still coming in? Can we start?
Yes.
Yeah? All right, why don't we start? So, at some point in about 40 minutes, Jessica will come up first and then you'll introduce yourselves. Do you want to come up also, or? Definitely. Yeah? Okay. Yeah, it looks like there will be. Hi. Hi. So in about 45 minutes, I'll call you up, and then Jessica is going to come up first, and then one after the other. All right? Great. What adds up to
The percentages for the grades.
Oh, he does.
Yeah. So someone came over and said,
Yeah.
where's the other 50%? I said, not asking questions.
Yeah.
But no, so do you want me to address that when I
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I can when I go over the syllabus. No
Okay.
problem. Yeah. On. Yeah. I'll say that I'll update it. Hi, morning. Good morning. Good morning. Unfortunately, this is not a seminar, so I'll be talking. Otherwise, we could have had though Sandel has interactions, maybe we can try that. You know the problem with teaching two classes, two lecture classes, is that you can't tell the same jokes twice. But given the success of my jokes yesterday, it's a good thing. So I'm teaching this class because this is the class I wish had been taught when I was an undergraduate here. This doesn't mean, thank you. Listen to the next sentence. This doesn't mean that it's the right class for you. And what I hope to do is today and over the next, actually over the next three lectures, is give you a sense of what this class is about so that you can make the decision of whether it is or is not for you. Before I go into the substance, let me just do some housekeeping. So this class, many of you know already, will not be taught again next year. It may be taught in 2 years' time. I'm not sure. Depends on whether I'll be here or not. But it's neither this nor 1508, the Psychology of Leadership, will be taught next year. It's very important for us, for the teaching staff, to get feedback from you. The best way to send us feedback, I mean, with the section leaders, it's easy, you meet with them. With me, if there is something about the lecture, either come to talk to me after or send me an email. This class is evolving. I know that there's a couple of you auditing it who took it last year. You'll see there's new stuff. Constantly trying to improve it based on feedback that we get from you. If you don't like something, if you like something, if you have a good story to go with something, a good video clip that can go with an idea, a good joke, especially, do share. But then there are emergencies, meaning sometimes you have to ask a question in the middle of the class, right? It's like when you got to pee, And when you gotta go, you gotta go, right? So we have a method of dealing with that. And what we'll do, if it is an emergency and you really have to, you know, stop me in the middle, we can take a positive psychology break. Just put your hand up in the middle and I'll stop and address it, because if something is not clear to you, it's probably not clear to too many others. The PowerPoints and the videos of this class will be on the website. The PowerPoints will be on, except for this class, before the beginning of the class, so that you can print it out and take notes during the class. Last year, most students preferred that. But while the videotape is going to be on the website, I prefer that you come to class. It's not very, you know, seminar is one thing, but here talking to five people will be a little bit difficult. So if you can make it, not just for this reason, for my own sake, but also I think there is a certain energy in the class that we can get, something that we do not necessarily get when we watch it on video. So I urge you to come, but you know, if you can't or want to watch it again, it will be on the website. Now, the fact that the PowerPoints and the course will be filmed means that you don't need to write down every word that I say. What I'd rather want you to do is to engage in active note-taking. What does that mean? That's different from passive note-taking, which is, okay, so he talked about this, I need to write this because maybe it will be on the exam. Rather, the way I'd like you to take notes is to engage with the material. So, for example, if I say something that, say, oh, well, you know, this is an idea that I can apply, or this is an idea that I want to share with my roommate, write it down. For two reasons. First of all, because it's more fun than just passively writing notes. But second, because you'll actually retain the material better. And most important, you'll be able to apply it to your lives better. This is very much an applied course. The students who gained the most benefit from it last year are ones who went ahead and applied what they learned here. Whether it's right after class or later. I'm getting emails now with students that said, you know, the idea of beliefs of self-fulfilling prophecies really helped me in my work, you know, students who graduated. Or I just started meditating. Or I've been exercising regularly since taking this class. Or, you know, I really had a setback and thinking about some of the ideas helped me get over it. As much as possible, try and apply it, and you start applying it by taking notes actively. Many of you have asked, what's the overlap with the psychology of leadership? The answer is very little. I mean, here and there, there may be some overlap in a quote that I, you know, a favorite quote of mine. No studies, as far as I remember, are overlapping. However, they are complementary. In what sense? In the sense that many of the ideas, the basic premises of the two classes are similar. Both of them are applied. Both of them draw on what we call a strength psychology, which is another word for positive psychology. But in terms of overlap, there will not be, hardly any overlap. What I did purposely in this class and in the next, in 1508, is use the first two lectures really to give you a sense of where the class is going so that you can make up your mind if you want to take one, the other, or neither. I want to start with a little bit of history, just to give you a sense of this positive psychology. I mean, it really came onto the scene in a storm. It's become one of the largest classes on many, many of the campuses around the country, and it all started fairly recently. So I want to give you a sense of where positive psychology came from, how it evolved to where we are today. So humanistic psychology, which is a group of psychologists like Abraham Maslow, whose text you're reading for this class, Rollo May, Carl Rogers, and various other psychologists, founded the humanistic psychology movement in the 1950s, also moved on into the 60s. And they were considered the third force in psychology. The third force, with the first force being behaviorism, the second force being psychoanalysis. And the way, and in many ways it was a reaction to these two forces. It was a reaction to behaviorism, because what does behaviorism say? Basically, we are like a box that you need to put in a stimulus and you get out a response, very similar to machines. It was also a reaction to psychoanalysis. Psychoanalysis that to a great extent focused on neurosis, on our instincts, most of them the base instincts. And it was a reaction to it. In what way was it a reaction to it? In that it said, no, we're more than just boxes of stimuli and responses. We're more than just instincts. We're more than just dark forces. We have potential for greatness. We have potential for heroism. And when the humanistic psychologist said we, it meant everyone. And they said we need to focus on it more. Now, this was a fresh voice within psychology, attracted many, many followers. Also, classes were full on college campuses. But there was a problem. The problem in humanistic psychology was that it didn't have the rigorous methodology, the epistemology. And what happened over the years is that it evolved, 60s, 70s, and 80s, into the self-help movement. And I'll say a few words about the self-help movement in a few minutes. It didn't have the scientific rigor. It didn't have the empirical rigor. The studies that are being run in William James were absent from humanistic psychology. And the problem was that it didn't hold, because you need the rigor in order to hold, in order to have traction, especially at a university. But if you go to the self-help shelves in the bookstore, you'll see that obviously it had a lot of impact, but not the university. And therefore, there are very few psychologists around the country who are teaching humanistic psychology. There are a handful, but not many. And then came positive psychology. Positive psychology said, we'll take the potential of the approach of the humanistic psychology and bring rigor to it. Regardless of humanistic psychology being different, still, I consider it the grandparent of positive psychology. And I want you to meet a couple of the grandparents. Abraham Maslow, as I said, you'll read a lot of him. Back in 1954, he published his seminal work, in which he had a chapter which he called Toward a Positive Psychology. 1954, it was way ahead of his time. Again, the book didn't have as much traction because there weren't that many studies run on the basic concepts, basic ideas there. Nevertheless, he was there. And he talked about, in that chapter, about a psychology of kindness, a psychology of optimism, a psychology of heroism, a psychology of success, a psychology of goodness, focusing on the positive rather than the negative. If Maslow is the grandfather, then Karen Horney is the grandmother. Maslow came from the behaviorist school of psychology. He studied monkeys at the beginning of his career and then moved on to humanistic psychology. Karen Horney started with psychoanalysis. She was a student of Freud. And then she said, wait a minute, psychoanalysis focuses too much on the negative. Let's look at the positive. So as I said earlier, reaction to behaviorism and reaction to psychoanalysis. So these are the grandparents, the humanists. Let's look at the parents. Martin Seligman, you're reading an article by him this week or next week. In 1996, he was the president of the American Psychological Association, best known for his work on learned pessimism, as well as learned optimism. Learned helplessness was his best known work. In 1996, he became the APA, American Psychological Association president, and his agenda was to make one, psychology more applied, and B, to start positive psychology. And he's been the champion ever since. He's at Penn University, but going around the world promoting positive psychology. Now, it's not that before positive psychology came into the scene, there wasn't research on happiness, well-being, self-esteem, relationships. Of course, there was research about it. But what positive psychology did and what Marcy Seligman did to a great extent was unify these scholars. And you'll understand next time why he had to unify these scholars, because of the dearth of research on these topics. Unified got grants. They're supporting, those of you who think of going into graduate school, they're supporting many graduate students doing research within positive psychology. One of the parents of positive psychology, right here at the university, Professor Ellen Langer. Some of you I know work with her. We're gonna encounter Professor Langer a few times through the semester, and I can guarantee you every time you read her research, you're gonna be blown away. And some of the things that she did are still, I mean, even if she did them in the 70s, are still considered the leading and the most important studies in the field. So we're gonna talk a lot about her and her work. And what she did, she took a lot of the ideas from humanistic psychology, the idea of mindfulness, which was really the realm of mysticism, and brought it and brought empirical rigor to it. Another of the parents of positive psychology, Professor Phil Stone. Those of you who've been to 1508 know that I'm dedicating these two classes to him. Was my mentor. Actually, both Langer and Professor Stone were my dissertation supervisors, which explains to a great extent why I'm here. Back in 1999, Professor Stone taught the first positive psychology class at Harvard. I was the TF, it was a seminar. We taught it again in 2002. And when I graduated, Professor Stone said, why don't you teach a lecture class on the topic? And there's a lot of demand for it. And he pushed very hard within the department. And here we are today. So let's get into what positive psychology is, or specifically this class. This class is not just about information. It's not about me feeding you research results. It's not about you just reading more and more about it. It is about what I hope to be transformation. Now, what is the difference? Information, which is what we mostly see in classes here, looks like this. This, let's say, is our mind. Information is that when we take information, knowledge, and we put it inside the container. This is what most education is about, right? So you read for the exam, you memorize, you listen to lectures, you take notes, and it all goes in here. One of the problems is that it goes in here and it leaves here very soon, right? Like 5 minutes after the final exam. This class will hopefully be different. Yeah, you'll get information, you'll get research, we'll talk about, you know, again, rigorous empirical work in the field. But more than information, it's about transformation. What is transformation? It's not about taking knowledge and putting it in here. It's about changing the form of the way our mind perceives the world. It's changing this. Changing the way we look at the world. You see, because especially when we talk about happiness, so much of whether we can attain happiness in our lives or not depends not on the information that we have. Okay, so I read another book, big deal. It depends on the way we look at the world. Think, for example, you're in a swim meet. Now, there are some people from the swim team here. And you were hoping to come in second, and you come in eighth in the race. One way of interpreting it is to say, you know, I suck, I'm no good, self-esteem down, depressed about it. That's one way of interpreting. Another way, even though I was hoping for second and came eighth, is to say, okay, depressing, it's upsetting, I'm sad, but what can I learn from it? One of the main themes of this course is the notion of learn to fail or fail to learn. What can I learn from it? We'll spend a whole lecture talking about it. How can I improve as a result of this race? In other words, it's the same information, right? Eighth place instead of second place. But very different interpretation depending on the form of our mind. Or think about another very common example. I'm sure you know people who have what we would consider everything. You know, they're wealthy, successful, you know, prominent, admired, and yet they're unhappy. On the other hand, you see people who have very little, barely get the basic, the minimum, and yet they're always upbeat, always happy. What goes in is not what determines happiness. The way we interpret it, the way we look at the world, is more than 50% of the equation of happiness, and we'll talk about that a lot throughout the course. Now, when I say change the form, I don't just mean it metaphorically. If I was giving this class before 1999, I would have just meant it metaphorically. I actually mean it physically. Because in 1999, and this is some of the research that we'll talk about when we talk about mindfulness, in 1999, they showed that the structure of our brain actually changes till the day we die. Until 1999, most researchers thought that it was, you know, changing until, many thought till the age of 3, others adolescence, some till our 20s. Today they know the brain changes till the day we die, regardless of age. One of the ways to change it, which we'll talk about, is by doing meditation. It actually changes the neural pathways of the brain if we persist and do it over time. We know that today because we have MRI and fMRI, again, things that we couldn't see in the past. So when I say transformation, I also mean it literally. How is this transformation going to come about? No, this is not Berkeley. It's also not Primal Scream. What I mean is that we're going to be covering less material, but uncovering more of our potential. Let me tell you a story to give you a sense of what I mean. Michelangelo's David, one of the most beautiful sculptors in the history of art. Michelangelo was once asked, how did you do it? How did you create David, this beautiful, huge structure? And he said, you know what? I went to the quarry, I saw this huge piece of marble, and in it, I saw David. All I needed to do was chip away the excess stone. Chip away the excess stone. See, you're going to learn very few new things in this class. But what I hope you will get out of this class will provide you the opportunity, create the conditions for you to chip away some excess stone. Because what humanistic psychology saw and what positive psychology saw was that each one of us had the potential within us. The potential that was limited by false beliefs, limited by education, as we'll discuss later to some extent, limited by many limitations. And what we're going to do is chip away those limitations. This is what transformation is about. Henry Thoreau, the soul grows by subtraction, not addition. Again, a very learned man. Great philosopher. He certainly, there was a lot of information in his mind, but he also realized that what it's about is the transformation. Another great psychologist who lived over 2,000 years ago, Lao Tzu. In pursuit of knowledge, every day something is acquired. In pursuit of wisdom, every day something is dropped. Knowledge, information. Wisdom, transformation. Information is not enough, certainly not in our world, where there is an information highway which we're part of. We also need to create a transformation highway. What is wrong is not the great discoveries of science Information is always better than ignorance, no matter what information or what ignorance. What is wrong is the belief behind the information, the belief that information will change the world. It won't. This, by the way, is the same as those of you who were here yesterday. The same for leadership. Sure, you can know about all the terrible things or the wonderful things happening in the world, but how do you change them? Information is not enough for that. So the approach that I'll take in this class is the humanistic approach. Let me just read you something that Maslow said. Maslow contrasts the humanistic approach to learning from other approaches to learning, whether behaviorism, psychoanalysis, or learning in general. Quote, if one took a course or picked up a book on the psychology of learning, most of it, in my opinion, would be beside the point. That is, beside the humanistic point. Most of it would present learning as the acquisition of associations, of skills and capacities that are external and not intrinsic to the human character, to the human personality, to the person himself. Again, external would mean the information. Intrinsic would mean transformation. And he continues. Humanistic philosophy offers a new conception of learning, of teaching, and of education. Stated simply, such a concept holds that the function of education, the goal of education, the human goal, the humanistic goal, the goal so far as human beings are concerned, is ultimately the self-actualization of a person, the becoming fully human, the development of the fullest height that the human species can stand up to or that the particular individual can come to. In a less technical way, it is helping the person to become the best that he is able to become. It's about uncovering the potential within each person. Sounds naive, sounds like not something that we would hear in most psychology textbooks. It is. It's naive, it's idealistic, and we're going to talk about naivete and idealism throughout the course and their importance. Another aspect of this class. It's not about providing definitive answers concerning the good life. It is about identifying the right questions. This is different from a math class where there are actual objective answers to the question. No one can tell you what will make you happy. No research can tell you what will make you happy or have higher self-esteem or be more motivated or improve your relationship. It's up to you to identify these things. Again, the only thing that the class can do, what we can do in sections, what I can do in the lectures, is provide you the conditions to ask the right questions, to be able to deal with them, whether in response papers, in talking to your friends or parents. Education is the quest for information and transformation, and therefore must begin with a question. Quest and question, no coincidence that they're connected etymologically. One of the problems in education, as Neil Postman argued, is that children enter school as question marks and leave as periods. Children often go to school, you know, they start school with a sense of awe, sense of excitement, looking forward to learning. But they often lose that awe, this looking up, looking forward to the next day, to the next class. Let me show you an excerpt from a very smart psychologist who talks about the different approaches of children compared to adults. Here he's talking about his experiences as a child attending Halloween parties.
So the first couple of years I made my own costumes, which of course suck, the ghost, the hobo, no good. Then finally, third year, begging the parents, got the Superman Halloween costume, not surprisingly. Cardboard box, cellophane top, mask included. Remember the rubber band on the back of that mask? That was a quality item there, wasn't it? That was good for about 10 seconds before it snapped out of that cheap little staple they put it in there with. You go to your first house, trick or snap, it broke, I don't believe it. Wait up, you guys, I gotta fix it. Hey, wait up! Wait up! That's what kids say. They don't say wait. They say, wait up. Hey, wait up. Because when you're little, your life is up. The future is up. Everything you want is up. Wait up. Hold up. Shut up. Mom, I'll clean up. Let me stay up. Parents, of course, are just the opposite. Everything is down. Just calm down. Slow down. Come down here. Sit down. Put that down.
Hopefully we'll be able to capture this sense of looking up, looking forward. A lot of it comes from asking questions. The one real object of education is to leave a man in the condition of continually asking questions. There's actually research on this, very solid research. John Kotter, professor at the business school, ran this study where he followed the class of business school, HBS, class of 1974. He followed them for 20 years, and he wanted to see how they were doing 20 years later. They were very successful, prominent, wealthy. But then within the class of 1974, 20 years later, he found a small group, about 5% of the graduating class, that was extraordinarily successful. And what he wanted to do was identify why. What is it about these people that made them more successful than their classmates? And he found two things. And again, these people were more successful not just professionally, but also interpersonally in their family life. What was unique about them? Again, there's no question, they were all smart, all driven. But there were two things that differentiated the extraordinary from the rest. One, they were driven and they believed that they could do well. And we're gonna spend a lot of time talking about beliefs, self-fulfilling prophecies. They believed in themselves. That's one. Two, they were always asking questions. That was one of their distinguishing characteristics. Always wanting to find out more, always wanting to learn more. The end of HBS wasn't the end of their education. Always read more, always talked to people about ideas, asked questions initially of their bosses, then of the people working for them, of their spouse, of their children, always asking questions. Two characteristics that distinguish them from the rest. So what is the question that's going to guide this class, what I call the question of questions, also the title of my book? How can we help ourselves and others, individuals, communities, and society, become happier? This class is very much about the individual, but a community is a collection of individuals. How can we make others happy? And society is a collection of communities. So how can we make society as a whole happy? And we'll get a lot of tools to do that in this class. Note also that I talk about how can we become happier. I didn't say how can we become happy. How can I become happy doesn't really help me as a question. What does it mean? Does it mean to be happy? Am I happy relative to the person sitting in the front row? Am I happy relative to the person sitting at the back, to the teaching staff? What does it mean, am I happy? Also, happy means a binary. Either I'm unhappy or happy. It means that there is an end to the pursuit. Okay, all I want to do is become happy. But that's not what happiness is about. First of all, it's impossible to measure happiness in an objective manner. So let's say on a 1 to 5, how happy are you? And I write 4, it will be a very different 4 from anyone else in the room. So you can't really gauge that. What I can gauge is, have I become happier relative to myself over the last 10 years, 5 years, year, or 10 years from now, asking the same questions? See, because one of the things when taking a class like this is that students very often ask, when we talk about happiness, wait, am I happy? Or when we have a class on self-esteem, wait, do I have self-esteem? Or when we take a class on relationships, is my relationship good? These are not the questions. Again, they're unhelpful questions. The helpful question to ask is, how can I become happier so that 5 years from now I'm happier than today? How can I increase my self-esteem so that 10 years from now my self-esteem is higher than it is today? I started thinking about these questions, you know, when I was 16, close to 20 years ago. Certainly happier 10 years ago than I was 10 years before then. I'm happier today than I was 5 years ago. And I hope that 10 years from now I'll be happier with higher levels of self-esteem than I have today. It's about pursuing happiness constantly. It's not binary. I'm unhappy or happy. I have high self-esteem or low self-esteem. How can I improve? How can I get better? How can I lead a more fulfilling life? Another thing about this class is that it's not a survey class. If you want a survey class, there is a handbook of positive psychology. It's about this thick, weighs about 10 pounds. And it's very good. It has a lot of articles in there and a great overview. You can read that. This will not be it. Rather, it's a selective exploration of the question of questions. The articles, the ideas that I think are central for making our lives better. The focus will be Western psychology. I have studied and I do study Eastern psychology and philosophy and practice it as well, but I'm not an expert there. But I will bring many ideas, and one of the nice things is that while Eastern psychology has been doing positive psychology for thousands of years, Western psychology is only realizing now some of these merits. So for example, we have a lot of research that we'll discuss about meditation. We have a lot of research about mindfulness in general, a lot of the wisdom that comes from the East. But this is not a cross-cultural course. It is eclectic. I was an undergraduate here, concentrated in philosophy and psychology. I then went and studied education for a year in the other Cambridge, and then did my PhD in organizational behavior, which is business, psychology, and ethics. I'm going to bring many of these ideas into this class because I think this is, again, the question is too big for just one discipline to handle. So it is eclectic and we'll draw on many areas. We'll study research, we'll study other people. I think the best self-help books are biographies because they show you the real person as opposed to the 5 steps to happiness or 3 steps to self-esteem. Studying a real life gives us a better sense. And we'll study ourselves for 2 reasons. First of all, because it is a class about making our lives better. But second, as Carl Rogers said, one of the founders of the humanistic psychology movement, what is most personal is most general. If we really understand ourselves better, we also understand other people better. Or as Maslow said, in delving into the depth of his own mind, one delves into the depth of all minds. There are, of course, individual differences. There are many of them. But in terms of the essence, there are a lot of similarities. So we are going to study ourselves and through that, learn to understand others better. This is not English 10A nor Math 55. You will not do as much reading as you would do for a survey English course. And it doesn't have the difficulty level of the most difficult class, even though 25A, I think, was elected as the most difficult class at Harvard. What it is about is rigorous fun. And I'll talk about that in a minute, what I mean by that phrase. Oliver Wendell Holmes, I would not give a fig for the simplicity on this side of complexity, but I would give my life for the simplicity on the other side of complexity. This is what this class is about. Simple ideas. Again, it's not difficult to understand the ideas here. It's not, again, not like 55A. You will not read a lot of stuff. The ideas that you will get are simple, but it's simplicity that's on the other side of complexity. And how do we get to the other side of complexity? By applying these ideas. How much you get out of this class depends on how much you put into it. The response papers, the section discussions, and how seriously you take the readings. Again, they were picked very, very carefully. It's a different kind of effort that's required. It requires courage to look inside, to write about your life. And change is hard. Let's do an experiment just for a second. And this is, after all, a psychology class. So take your hand and fold your hands. Just try this. Okay, how does this feel? Fine, relaxing. All right, now take your hands and fold them the other way around. How does that feel? I told you this class is hard. Change is difficult. Even folding our hands in the opposite direction is difficult. So can you imagine changing habits of things that we have learned over the last 20 years or so, chipping away that excess stone? Change is hard, but it's possible. William James thought it takes about 21 days to change habits. And we're going to help you in this class. Again, some of the groundbreaking work, I think, in this area was done by the TF, Sean, who did great work last year on changing habits. So we're going to take some of his ideas and apply them. This is what I said last year, we didn't do it. And Sean did it with some of his students. This year, we're going to do it for the whole class. It's not easy to change habits, but it's certainly possible. John Dryden, English poet, said, "We first make our habits, and then our habits make us." Now, there are many habits that are good for us, but there are some that are not, that are limiting, and these we'll try and chip away in this class. So what's this rigorous fun thing? I mentioned the self-help movement. You know, today there is a real disconnect between the self-help movement and academic psychology. On the one hand, you have pop psychology, right? You go into Harvard bookstore, you go into the Coop, and you find dozens, probably hundreds of self-help books. And there are new ones being written every day. And the shelf is packed and always changing. Very charismatic, very interesting, many of them well-written, but most of them not based on research, lack the rigor. So while there is a lot of charisma there, a lot of accessibility to the common person, there is very little rigor. Go to the other extreme, academia. A lot of rigor, empirical research, very important stuff being done. Testing and retesting ideas. But you know what the problem is? According to some researchers, some of them actually from here, the average academic journal article is read by 7 people. And that includes the author's mother, right? Rigor, serious stuff, accessibility. What this course is about is bringing the rigor from academia and the fun from the self-help movement. It's about bridging the gap between the ivory tower and Main Street. Okay, any questions about the material thus far or about the course in general? Just one thing on your, I'm gonna go over the syllabus in a minute, but on the syllabus, if you see the on the other side, the grading, some of you don't have it. Again, I promise it wasn't 55A, but if you add it up, you'll see that it's less than 100. I never took 55A, apparently, and I guess none of us took 55A, right? Yeah, so I overlooked it. So I'll rectify it on the website. So it's 100. What I want to do now is have the teaching staff of this class introduce themselves. We have an absolutely amazing group, a group that's committed to the course, committed to you, so that you can derive the most out of this class. So I'd like to start by calling up Jessica Glazer, who is our head TF, and then everyone else will follow to introduce themselves.
Good morning. Welcome to Positive Psychology. My name is Jessica Glazer, and I'm so happy to see all of you here today. This is going to be an amazing semester. I really look forward to getting to know all of you. There are a lot of you, but if you've worked with me before, you know that I mean what I say. So let me tell you a little bit about myself. I graduated from Brandeis University with a degree in sociology. After graduation, I moved back to New York, where I worked at Sotheby's, Pfizer, and as a manager for the comedian Lewis Black. I've also trained for the last 12 years as a musical theater and rock vocalist. Last fall, I moved back up to Cambridge to TF Wit and Humor, and this semester I'll be working with you guys and also for the psychology of leadership. So that's my 15-second summary, and I really do hope to meet all of you, so please be in touch with us. Before I forget, sectioning will be next week. We'll have it online Thursday and Friday. We are going to have it for 2 days so that we can get everybody settled and we can get rolling with the amazing work that we're going to do this semester. And now I'd like to introduce the teaching staff. If you guys could all come up and introduce yourselves. I honestly believe that we have the most gifted teaching staff for any class at Harvard. They're an amazing group of people, and this is going to be a wonderful semester. So if you guys could just come up now, that'd be great. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Ellen Brodsky. That works quite well. Let's see, I studied theology at Haverford College a long time ago, worked in sexuality education for about 10, 12 years, and I work in documentary film right now. And the last work I did here at Harvard was I TF'd a sexuality class about 3 years ago. I think almost everyone graduated from that. And I love TFing here, and I'm friends with a lot of the TFs, and I'm glad to be back.
Hi, I'm Debbie Cohen. I graduated from here in 91 and then went to the education school in 92, also here. And I'm Tal's yoga teacher.
Namaste.
In my pursuit of happiness, I left a career of teaching high school English to teach yoga. And I teach throughout the Harvard community to sports teams, through the Wellness Center, the dance program, etc., and run a yoga teacher training program, which is committed to pretty much the same premise as this course, exactly the same premise as this course. More, you know, emphasis on experiential learning has been my interest, and on the same path as Tal, so thanks.
Hi, my name is Kim Westheimer, and I've been TFing for a couple of courses at Harvard recently, the human sexuality class, and then most recently, social psychology. So it's been fun to see some familiar faces here from those two classes. And this course just sounds like a lot of fun to me. In addition to doing work at Harvard, I'm an independent consultant. I do a lot of work with schools and with human service organizations, looking at issues around prejudice and stereotyping, and around race, gender, sexual orientation, and sexuality and such. And this just seems like it'll be a really fun course. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, I'm Sean Acor. Hey, guys. I taught last year for Positive Psychology with Tal. We filled up Emerson, and today we filled up Sanders. If they want Tal to teach again, they're gonna have to build a bigger building here. Based on my calculations between his two classes, Tal's teaching over one out of every six students at Harvard. You don't have to think about it. I already did the math. That's 600% of Harvard. Also helped with some of the math on the syllabus, if you look there. I taught you guys for a lot of different classes. I taught for human sexuality as well, Wit & Humor, English Bible, Classics in Christian Literature, Positive Psych, Personality Psych, a couple other ones I'm probably forgetting. I went here as an undergrad, studied English and religion, and then went to the Divinity School. I studied Christian and Buddhist ethics there, and now I'm working in a psych lab with Alan Langer, who we saw up earlier, working on a novel. I've been working on it for a while. teaching here. I'm loving it. I'm applying to business school now, so I'm really looking forward to meeting all of you.
Hi, I'm Deb Levy.
Thank you.
This is my fourth course TFing here. I've TFed in human sexuality, implied social psychology, and adolescent development this fall, and I've had a great time each semester. I've been waiting to TF and actually take this class since it was offered last year. I went to one class, and my dear friend Jeff TF'd, and just the concepts he would tell me over the phone, I've been applying to my life, so I was really, I'm really excited to be here. I'm happier this semester than I was even last semester. And last spring, I actually initiated the first Harvard Field Day where we did egg toss and three-legged race. I had my sections compete with each other, so I hope we can have some more fun this semester.
Hi, I'm Pat Hernandez. I graduated in 04 from Leverett House in psychology. I basically took every course that Tal offered, and he was my thesis advisor, and it was wonderful. Right now, I work in conflict management in Boston, which is basically negotiation, effective communication, things of that nature, and postponed a consulting job in change leadership to come and be part of this class because it's going to be amazing, and hopefully I'll see most of you either here or in leadership psychology.
Good morning. My name is Matt Killingsworth. My passion is really positive psychology, and especially some of the questions, the question that Tal is asking, really how do we take each of us, our organization, society as a whole, and move happiness higher? I graduated from Duke University a few years ago after studying engineering and economics, and I really decided this was really the question that was really important to ask. I'd started a company, I work for a startup software company in Cambridge now, and I've realized that really building companies and building products, that really isn't what it's all about. It's really about sort of the human organism and trying to, you know, almost from an engineer's mindset, how do we optimize that environment and that organism? So I hope to meet some of you, and I'm really excited to be in this class.
Hi, I'm Jeff Perotti, and woo! Thanks. And glad to see I have some fans and some people I know here. Some of you I know from Winthrop House, some from other courses that I've TF'd: human sexuality, psychology and law, creativity, adolescent development, and positive psych last year. I'm really excited to be back. I'm hoping I'll be able to TF this course as well. But today I wanted to make sure I came because I only have like a few days left of this tan, and I thought that this would at least be a large, captive, appreciative audience here. So thank you, thanks. So you'll get a lot of practical tips in this class, like for those of you looking to extend your tans, moisturize often. Anyway, that the story that Thanks. Can't overestimate that. The story I like to tell that to illustrate the principles of positive psychology in my life is a story that actually happened 10 years ago to me when I was first involved with my partner, Steve, and I wanted to take him home to my family in Cleveland, Ohio to meet my parents and all, and I was talking to them on the phone, and I was really surprised when my father said, no, Jeff, why don't you just come home alone? You know, people really won't understand. We're not having the holiday here and all. And I was chucked because I had been out to them for several years. I thought I had a really supportive family. And, you know, but this was my Italian Catholic father who was like, no, just come home alone. So I was pretty upset. So I got off the phone and I was crying. And Steve hugged me and said, don't worry, honey. There'll be other holidays we can ruin. And I was like, and sure enough, there were. And but immediately, I felt better. And it just showed me the power of humor and relationships and reframing to feel better and think positively about what might seem like negative events. And also, in retrospect, my family has really embraced Steve, and he's very much a part of our family. So it speaks to the possibility that things and people do change, which is a fundamental premise of this course. So I really look forward to working with you either in this course or seeing you somewhere else on campus. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. Yeah, we're gonna have a lot of rigorous fun in this class, I can tell. I wanna go over the syllabus. Just briefly, you have our, I didn't know how many TFs we'd need for this class. but I guess we'll need quite a few. So my email and Jessica's email are on there. And you can email us anytime. Don't worry about waking us up. The first 2 weeks, as I said, will be the introduction. Then on February 16th, we'll go into the science of positive thinking. Again, there's a lot of self-help books on that. We're actually going to look at the science behind it. We're going to tell stories, amazing athletic feats, amazing personal, interpersonal feats coming from belief in oneself. We're going to talk about the question of focus, showing that it's not the external that matters, but it's more the internal. And we're going to learn about how to change our perspective, our interpretation. And Jeff's story is right on. You know, how do you take a difficult, objective situation and make light of it? March 2nd, can we change? March 7th, yes, we can change. I wouldn't be teaching this class if I thought it wasn't possible. Yeah, academically, I'm interested in the topic. I love reading this material, but I wouldn't put as much effort as I'm putting into it if I didn't think it was possible to change. March 9th, I'm going to talk about the mind-body connection, the first lecture on the mind-body connection. We're going to talk about it some more, the importance of sleep. I think it's a significant topic at Harvard. After spring break, we'll talk about perfectionism. In many ways, this is the most personally meaningful lecture for me. For years, I've been dealing with it. I know that at Harvard, it is quite pervasive. And I want to share with you some of my personal stories, my shift toward becoming less of a perfectionist. Again, not yes perfectionist, no perfectionist, but making some progress, and about the research that's out there and some of the exercises that we can do to help ourselves and others. April 13th, the right person to teach the class on humor, Sean. Very difficult, by the way, to teach a class on humor. Most, if you've been to humor lectures, most of them are extremely dry. There is a real disconnect between the lecture and the class. Sean is perfect guy to teach it. And he gave it last year, which was amazing. We're going to talk about some other things, you know, relationships, self-esteem, and so on. About the grading, if it were up to me, this class wouldn't be graded. Let me quote Maslow. If it were up to me, this class wouldn't be graded. here is Maslow, quote, "In the ideal college, there would be no credits, no degrees, and no required courses. A person would learn what he wanted to learn." Harvard is a great place, not ideal, and hence there are credits and there are grades. If you want to take this class pass-fail, by all means, do so. Midterm and the final exam are both going to be in class. So last year, 1504 was a take-home. I've decided for various reasons not to have it a take-home. I know it's inconvenient for some, but I think it would be most beneficial to have it at home. One thing about the readings. I'm going to go to the final project in a minute. But one thing about the readings, there are three books required. One of them is not there yet, and that is the Maslow book. What they have right now is a secondhand version of the full book, which I think is very expensive. I've asked Wiley, who are printing the book, to make us a smaller book, only with the chapters that we're reading, which obviously I think are the best chapters from a very thick book. And they've agreed, and it will be less than half the price of what the full book would cost. So that should, maybe it even came in today, I'm not sure. Anyone been to the Coop this morning? Is it, are the thin Maslow books there? It's there? Great. Okay, so it's there. But if you want the full book, they also have secondhand books of the full version. Let me say a few words about the final project, because I think that's one of the unique things about this class. You're not going to just hand in a paper, like in most classes. What you're going to hand in is a 20 to 30 minute presentation. That will include PowerPoints and text. on any topic within positive psychology, either a topic that we talked about, such as happiness, relationships, whatever, or any other topic that you are interested in, that you want to delve deeply into and really get a sense of what this material is about. What you are going to hand in is a 10 to 15 page double-spaced text of the lecture as if you're talking, with slides, either in Word or if you know how to use PowerPoints, in PowerPoints. Not only are you going to hand these in, you're also going to actually give this presentation. You're going to give it to three or four people in this class. They're going to give you feedback on it. Again, this, of course, is not, this part will certainly not be graded, but just to help you to make it even better and also for you to practice teaching it. What we also hope is that you'll be giving this presentation to other people in your family, and when you go home, to your friends. I know I gave my first presentation to the squash team here when I was an undergrad, to my team, you know, 10 people, but they listened. And that's how it starts. It will include reference to research, again, Ivory Tower and Main Street. So a presentation which will be accessible, but at the same time have the academic rigor. And use as many stories, film clips, exercises as you want in this presentation. Again, some of my lectures I've tried to, well, model this, but come up with your, you know, with your own ideas. Why presentation? There are many reasons. Here are the two main reasons. First of all, because the best way to learn something is to teach it. I know positive psychology now very well because I taught the class and I'm teaching it again. I know leadership very well because I'm teaching the class. There's no better way to learn something. And then it doesn't just go away one day after the exam. It actually really sticks and it makes a difference. That's why I want you to choose a topic that you're really interested in, that you really think will make a difference in your life. Again, when I talk about everything actually, I'm also talking about myself. I'm taking this class just as you are. I want to be happier at the end of this class than I am today, as does Debbie. It's very personal, and when you teach this stuff, you learn it better. The second reason why it's important for us, and that's another central theme in the class, is to spread goodness. And we'll talk a lot about it next time. We want you to teach this material to other people as well, to talk about it. The more you talk to other people about this class, the more you'll get out of it, because that's how we assimilate it. So teach either the material that you see here, but certainly your own presentation. And also for us, it's much more fun reading presentations than it is academic papers. I hope you'll decide to take this class. I hope you'll enjoy it. Hope to see you next week.